And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 851, recapping your week 7 fab and much, much more. And in order to do so, join with me weekly, co-host of the show, number one overall in the main event as of May 4th, 2026. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Vinted, how we doing, my friend?
Doing well, Bubba. First off, may the fourth be with you. I got my my Star Wars shirt on, my Yankee Star Wars.
I should have worn mine. I ran home. I'm mad now. Dang it. I'm a Star Wars also like nerd. I'm proud of it. I'll
be with you. Yeah. There's no shame in saying that.
No.
It's just adding on to a very crazy day in the baseball world.
Goodness gracious. Crazy, like, we always think it's like a crazy, like, you know, day, couple. It just seems like it's every day now. It just doesn't stop at the moment. Between closers, between injuries, you're number one overall, just all kinds of stuff going on. The sad passing of one of your, we were kind of talking before the show, someone you grew up with, essentially, is what I'll say, mm-hmm. because it was in your ears all the time, John Sterling. Like, I've already thought, watching, like, Mike Kruko get very sick over the last few years, like, I'm dreading the day that it's, like, no more Kruk and Kipe. I guess just the way I've grown up forever. So, like, I get it. I get where you're coming from. Did you want to say anything about John Sterling while we're here?
I know he got a lot of crap late in his career because he was in his mid-80s calling baseball games. So it's hard for him to see. Like, he made errors every once in a while. Wasn't like real, he tried his best, but just all, like, the 2000s, 90s, he was the best. He was the best. And even so, later in his career, I always loved listening to him and Susan in the car if I was driving around unable to watch the game. So I was telling you this, if anyone – isn't really aware, but the Yankees had a pretty good video tribute at the start of, before the game started, that they showed on the YES Network, and it was cool. They were showing all the old home run calls, so there's like Robinson Cano, Bernie Williams, Tino Martinez, all these guys I grew up watching. So it was a pretty cool nostalgia hit, and to top it off, the Bleacher Creatures do their roll call every first inning of the home games, and after they went through the infield or the whole team, they did one for John Sterling, so that was pretty cool too.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, there's certain traditions. That's one thing about baseball. Like, all sports, I know, have them. It just feels like I grew up playing baseball and watching baseball. Like, there's something about certain traditions that took place there. And I, you know, I obviously despise the Dodgers. The Yankees are the East Coast Dodgers to many. So, like, I get it. But, you know, don't you know Robinson Cano? Like, there's always, like, there's something I even remember from, like, over here that if I don't remember him now, the second, if I were to hear it, I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, I've heard that a million times. Like, he had a couple of controversial ones at times when, like, Hideki Matsuyama went deep. That might have been a little rough, but Sterling was great. He was a one of a kind. We haven't seen that in a long time. It's kind of like if Jeff Erickson were allowed to announce games, probably, with the tongue-in-cheek dad jokes and puns. Like, that's probably where you get with that situation. But one bit of news before, like, again, we said it's been a wild set of news. You can find it in lots of places. If you're on the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon, I try to update you each and every evening on everything going through there. Plus, the Discord is littered with information for you throughout the day. But I guess the biggest nugget that'll take place, a potential – he did go number one, I think, in at least one draft this draft season. Tarek Skubal is going to have surgery on his elbow for some loose bodies. He's going to be out 2 to 3 months, Ben. This it sucks. I'm gonna say it's not surprising because of the last two starts shaking his elbow. It felt like something was up. It sucks that they waited until Monday to come to this conclusion. But what are your thoughts on Tarek Skubal out, let's just say, 3 months? Because you got to be realistic about the situation. Like, Rodon is still hopefully coming back this week. And he had that surgery in, what, October, November? So, like, things could go wrong to set things back is what I'm trying to say. So let's say at least 3 months, could be the whole season. What are your thoughts on this injury with Tarek Skubal?
This one hit me, too. It's annoying. It's one of my main events. Not the one that's leading the overall. Luckily, I dodged a bullet there so far. But, with Skubal in this main event, I think I might have to cut him. We were talking before, there was some back and forth between some pretty prominent NFBC players on Twitter. Different positions, I think, or different takes on keeping him or dropping him. But I think by the time Fab comes, I might just drop him. For this team, I also got Jackson Chourio back, and I think I'm going to be getting Nick Lodolo back, so I'll be trading injuries for another injury potentially. But if they give it up, yeah. But I mean, this feels like I probably want to drop him just in case, so I have a chance to add someone who could help my team with that spot, you know, because this main is doing fine. It's hovering around 100 overall, so that definitely has a shot of moving up if I can make some right ads. It's going to hurt losing Skubal on this team, but I think you just kind of have to bite it and move on.
That's where I'm at. Like, I understand if people want to try to hold and do whatever, but with me, I said with Edwin Diaz, I've said it with a lot of guys, I've said it in general, just philosophy when people have asked questions. Like, if it's over a month, I'm going to really think about it. If it's over 2 months, you're probably gone, because all it takes is one step back and you're out half a season. That's at the beginning of the season. Now we have five months left. If you're out 3 months without a setback, obviously we're not seeing you till like late August, maybe, if things go well. And what level are those starts? There's a million what ifs, and you know, some of the arguments is, what if someone else picks them? That's fine. Let them spend the money and stash them. To your point, one of your points is what I'm going with the most is, I want someone on my roster that can help me right now. With as crazy as all the injuries continue to be, I'm going to try to keep as many healthy bodies as I can, because I'm going to need them. Is what it comes down to. So that's where my brain at. Like, if it was a, you know, like Ryan Helsley, who's on the IL, and they say it's minimum 15 days. Well, yeah, I'm not dropping Ryan Helsley. Like Palencia, Duran. Palencia's already back. Duran's back Tuesday. Those were like less than month type situations, and that's what they said coming out of it. This is obviously, they're flat out already going, it's 2 to 3 months, and I'm going to lean on the side of three with Tarek Skubal. So it sucks for him, though. Big contract year coming up, and he turned down some very, very good money. So we'll have to see where that one pans out. It's not the first surgery on that elbow either, is the rough spot. All right. Again, tons of news. Check out the Patreon and other locations for what you need there. But we are here to talk Fab. And it's become quite the chore each and every week. Our text thread was active almost all day yesterday, which was crazy, between the Goose, RIP, getting sent to AAA. Again, injuries, closer chaos, all of a sudden Kittredge, probably not the guy when that took place, and many other factors here. So, Ben, I'll let you break it down, because you say it better than I do. What does spending look like this week using Ryan's Fab Tracker again, which you can get at the Bubba the Bloom Patreon?
All right, so for the OCs, we'll start. We have this, it's the fourth highest spend per team per week that we have so far, $56. It was $86 the week before that, so dropped to $30. And week 7 of 2025 was $49, so slightly above by $7 on average per team. This brings the OC spend to just above $400, which is a little below where we were at last year. It was 601 remaining after this week. In 2025, we're at 598. So pretty close, just a little bit ahead of, or just a little bit ahead of last year. And then main event, pretty close as well. We're down to 637 remaining per team after $57, almost identical to the OC in week 7. It was down from 62 in 2025 in week 7. And the balance per team now is 637 versus 631 in 2025. So it's tracking pretty similarly in both contests, which is always crazy to see how close the spending trends. And I think we had some big names be available this week in both formats. And I think really what it comes down to is just how available they were, kind of like last week with Christian Scott and J.R. Ritchie. Chris Scott was this week. It was J.R. Ritchie and Tolley last week.
Tolley, yeah.
Yeah, they were not widely available. Had they been, I think the spending would have been greater. Probably same thing with Logan Henderson this week and Christian Scott. So, yeah, kind of spoiled two of the big ads, but I'm sure everyone kind of realized that already.
No, it's all good. You didn't spoil anything. And it makes sense. It's a good thing to mention. Like, there's a reason the OCs get, like, when we talk about, like, the top players to add each week, it's like, okay, in the main event, they might have higher averages or a higher max because of the scarcity of said player in that realm. So it's kind of what Ben was talking about there, where in 12s, they might be available everywhere. And also 12s have a different just reality to the situation of bidding there. I guess reality is probably not the right word, because there's nothing, there's no reality to it. It's just throw stuff at the wall half the time in 12s and see what sticks. And it's interesting to me to see the pricing so similar, like you were saying, just because I've played 12s enough, and it's always like I'm usually super tepid with my bids in 12s, and this year I have not been. My OC, I've been free flowing. I'm not the guild's free flowing, but like I'm down to, and I'm in the 500 range, which is very rare for me after 7 weeks. But I also know in 12s, as the season goes on, you can get a lot of cheap players in 12s. 15s, you probably still can get some, but it's not as ideal as you'd like. So very interesting to see. and we'll keep track of that each and every week. But let's get into the top ads of the week. We will start with the I keep saying we're going to start with 12s. I end up talking about them on both. So we're going to start with 12s. What we do is after we focus on the main 12s and with the crossover to 15s, then we go to 15s, the people that were heavily added that weren't offered in 12s to help you for the upcoming fab, which also correlates with what Ben was talking about when, you know, some guys weren't added because they weren't available. Well, because they're usually picked up a week or two before they're picked up in 12s. It is a theme proven through time. So, all right, let's get to it, Ben. RotoWire Online Championship 12-team leagues. The most added player this week, Christian Scott, in 199 leagues, as high as 138, as low as a dollar. Christian Scott bummed some people out last week after that five-walk performance, then backed it up with the gym. And we kind of said that even last week, like when people were dropping Christian Scott, like this is the week to get him cheap. And now if you didn't do it, you paid for him this week. Christian Scott, like we said, 199 leagues, as high as 138, average of 46 in OCs. He was added in 41 of 60 main events, Ben, as high as 226. So a lot more, almost $100 more was the max. The average was 116 in the mains, average 46 in online championships. So Christian Scott was a hot commodity, and he gets Coors Field this week in some poor, poor weather, if that's any narrative that works for you. But I think more importantly, Ben, it feels like Christian Scott's got a place in that rotation for a little while, which put him higher up the list for me as well. What were your thoughts when you saw this Christian Scott bidding this week?
I was excited. The first start didn't go as planned for Scott. He had five walks in less than two innings, so it was a rough go for him in that one. But then he bounced back nicely versus the Angels, which aren't the best lineup, but 8 Ks, no walks. You like love to see that ratio in five innings. So that made me confident in bidding on Scott where he was available. He wasn't available in all my leagues, kind of like how I said at the start of the show. But, you mentioned Coors. I never look at the upcoming matchups when I try to add someone. I really just care about the skills and then also what's the likelihood that they're going to stick around in their team's rotation for a decent amount of time. So kind of the same thing with Logan Henderson, who we're going to talk about soon as well. The Coors matchup isn't ideal for as bad as the Rockies are. And I believe in both leagues where I got Scott, I still sat him, which is fine, though. It's not like I'm streaming him this for the week. I'm just trying to acquire a good arm. And I pulled up the Mets rotation, and the Senga injury could be real bad. Lumbar spine inflammation, and he's had an injury being hurt already. He's not the youngest pitcher either. So he could be out a while. And even if he does come back, there's a good chance that David Peterson is, assuming that Scott pitches well, Peterson would be out of the rotation because he's already been like a star, a follower, bulk reliever. I think that's what he did today in Coors. Yeah. So, and I was on Scott when he first got called up a couple years ago. Of course, he's coming back from Tommy John, I believe, or internal brace, one of the two. That kind of I could probably explain the wildness in his first start back when he had those five walks. But I think just with the landscape of injuries and now that we lost Skubal for maybe the whole year and Joe Ryan could be hurt as well, I think this trying to get Scott and his upside made a lot of sense this week.
Yeah, no, I'd say where I was with you. A lot of the points you made there is a lot of the pitchers I go for now, especially the younger guys, like people should know by now listening to this show, listening to me and Ryan, like I usually don't go crazy on the young talent. Like I spend my money judiciously, I like to say. But if I do spend one, it's more so I look for the long-term effects or just any player. If I spend higher dollars, I'm planning on more than just a one-week stream. So to your point, I wasn't as concerned of Colorado on the schedule this week. I was looking at Kodai Senga might be out for a couple of months, the way things are going. And to be fair, it's not like he was pitching great to hold him back in the rotation if Scott can figure it out. So I was a fan of Christian Scott. This is a guy that a couple of years ago in the minors before he got hurt, had like a 4% walk rate and over a 30% strikeout rate. Like he's very, very good young pitcher. Comes with a ton of high expectations. So hopefully he can stay healthy and take advantage of it. So I was fully on board with you here. And if people do want to look at the future, you get Colorado this week, again, decent pitching weather, actually. And it's Detroit the following week. And then a two-step against Washington and Miami. Like, he's got a really nice – and then Miami again the following week. He's got a great schedule coming up for the month of May. If I don't know, subject to change, as always. But if you want to start talking look-aheads, like, there's a great spot for that. And that's why I liked him and other guys I have picked up throughout the season. And you roll with it. And right now it's like I started this like draft season, Ben. I was all like, I want strikeouts. Well, his ratios have been damned. Like, I'm just looking for guys that can stay healthy and give me like six innings. Like I told you before the show about Shane Baz, like just get through six with like, just give me a quality start and I'll walk away as happy as can be right now. Just don't get destroyed. And it's a win in these days, Ben. Like Rhett Lauder made me humble on what a bad start is. Like Rhett Lauder made me feel so much better about myself. That was something I needed to see and feel and suffer through to not care as much.
No, you didn't. That one was brutal. That was, no one should have to suffer through that one.
When I was at it, I wasn't watching it. I had my phone and I saw it. I'm like, huh. And then you started texting and I'm like, oh, so I looked at it again. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
This kept getting worse every time you looked. Like,
make it stop. But yeah, good times. We'll talk about Rhett Lauder later in the show. All right. The second most added player in the OCs, as expected, is Logan Henderson. Picked up in 189 online championships. Logan Henderson had a max of 351, a min of 400, and an average of 82. Folks, to still have maxes that are, in theory, 35% of the original budget as we get through the season, that person's poor or has not bid all season, because as the season goes on, the maxes should, in theory, start getting lower. Again, it's only week 7. Logan Henderson, now to the testament of people already rostering him, was only added in 14 main event leagues. He was picked up in 14 leagues, high of 279, which was lower than the 351 of the OCs. Average of 172, though. So if you're in on Logan Henderson, like the 75th percentile was $197, whereas in OCs it was 101. So if you wanted Logan Henderson in a main event, you're spending some cash. Even the 25th percentile is 139. You were up to over 139, basically, for 75. Like, a lot of people were spending some cash. What are your thoughts on Logan Henderson? Because this is the guy I wanted out of anybody this week, even though Christian Scott might have a safer spot in the rotation, as stupid as that sounds. So what are your thoughts on Logan Henderson?
Yeah, I just hope that they don't do what they did last year to Logan Henderson, they being the Brewers. But I will say, though, Brendan Sproul has been horrible, and they gave him a shot, and I know he's gotten some better outings since how he started the year, but if Henderson pitches like he did in his last game versus who was it? It was versus the Nationals, where he almost had the exact same game as Scott did against the Angels. Henderson had eight Ks, no walks, six innings, only two runs allowed, three base runners. So that's an awesome start. And a lot of the concern with Henderson was also that they weren't allowing him to go deep in his games, at least in the minors. I know they were stretching him out to be a starter, because I think when he got called up in April for that one game or the doubleheader, he only pitched two innings. So he didn't really seem like he was stretched out, which is kind of odd. But I know I didn't realize during offseason that he had gotten hurt last year, because I was just so annoyed by them not even having him called up that I forgot Henderson had a elbow thing. But hopefully he's past that now. And I mentioned Sproat as a potential option of losing a spot, and that would be when Priester and or Woodruff comes back.
Well, bright side is we didn't know it ahead of time, but on Monday, Priester got shut down on his rehab again after his third rehab start because he had a setback. So that made my Logan Henderson, no offense to the Priester family, made my Logan Henderson shares feel a lot better, because I was expecting Priester to come back and they just do what they did last year. To your point, sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to get to the point. Priester setback helps a lot as well.
It does. And Woodruff was down a ton of miles per hour, like 5 or 7 on his fastball. So he could be toast. But yeah, Henderson, big ad. I don't think I had a league where he and Scott were both available, but I think I had them available across all my leagues at least. So they were both the top priority. And Henderson is someone I had a lot in draft and holds when I thought he was going to make the rotation out of spring training before they made the trade for Sproul and Harrison came over. So I like the skills for Henderson. I think he deserves to be up here at the top. And yeah, just the carnage in 15 team leagues is why the difference was so big. Like we always say, between the main event and the OCs, this the three extra teams makes it really tough to, or really makes you have to spend up to get these guys, these big prospects. And Henderson has success in the past, so I think there's a good chance he could do so. But unfortunately, kind of like with Scott, last thing I'll say is that Henderson faces the Yankees this week. So I think I actually sat him as well in the main event where I did get him, because the Yankees have been as hot as anybody. I think they had like the best WRC plus versus righties over the last 3 weeks. So it's another long game play for Henderson. But like you said, Scott seems to have a little more runway, but with the setback to Priester and the Woodruff injury, I think Henderson could stick around for a while too.
Yeah, with the like Woodruff injury, I'm still waiting for that message, that note to come out that he's having like season ending surgery, because like to just drop down to 85 and have nothing wrong seems just insane. anything can happen, but it seems insane. But yeah, just for projected starters, similar to Scott, Henderson's in the rotation through May as of now between the Priester setback and Woodruff. You got the Yankees this week, and at least it's in Milwaukee, which helps a little bit. You don't have the short porch. But you get at Minnesota next week, sweet. At Wrigley, you never know. And then the following week versus the Cardinals. So, he's got some matchups that he can take advantage of as well. I think out of a lot of these young guys we've talked about the last few weeks, Henderson's been the guy I've been excited about all season. Just been waiting for the Brewers to kind of get it out of their system and realize how good he really is. And they finally did for now, is what I'll say. So, yeah, it's cool because, Peyton Tolley, and he pitched great, 8Ks, 7 shutout against the Tigers, or 7-1 runners, whatever, on Monday. So he bounced back. Tolley is awesome. You got J.R. Ritchie. We'll see. There's a mixed bag. But the skills are fine. We got Logan Henderson. We got Christian Scott. I know I'm forgetting a couple probably, but Trey Gibson got called back. He already got sent back down. Elmer Rodriguez has 1 star. But we're getting a lot of young arms. Just guys to keep an eye on going forward. All right, the third most added player, NOCs. This makes sense. Weirdly, not added in every league. This goes to show you online championships. Travis Bazzano picked up in 183 leagues, high as 251, as low as a dollar. He had an average bid of $59 in the OCs. In the main events, picked up in 56 main events, as high as 227, average of 95 for Travis Bazzano. Ben, that surprises me. Is all I'm going to say. Former number one pick just a year ago or something. I think it was 2024 when he was picked up. 2024, first overall pick. He's got his second career hit tonight, or he's got 4 hits now, so he got a few hits over the weekend. Good hit tool, ton of speed, limited power, it looks like, Ben. This feels like an Antonacci-type profile, is what I said. When I wrote it up, I said, if you liked Antonacci, Bazzano's probably a few bucks more. Did not expect this many bucks more, Ben. So what was your thoughts on when you saw these bids?
I think the number one overall pick, or whatever it was, kind of plays a role in this. People see that, are aware of that high draft pick and the prospect pedigree that Bazzano has, and that's probably why the prices got jacked up. I wasn't really in the market for a middle infielder, so I think I maybe had 1 bid across my 4 fab leagues for Bazzano. Yeah, and then your comp to Antonacci is interesting. So looking at Bazzano's minor league stats, he's played parts of 3 seasons in the minors, 135 total games, 14 homers, 25 steals, 252 average. So not the most impressive numbers. He had 9 homers, 12 steals in 84 games last year, so maybe that's a 2020 pace, a little bit under that if you prorate that. But the 245 average is kind of a little alarming because you can't really expect someone to hit better in the majors when they get called up. So, and it's kind of goes in line with a high strikeout rate. I don't have the exact percentage, but he had 147 strikeouts and 135 games, so that's getting up there a little bit. So I feel like some of the bad average is definitely not some bad luck due to BABIP or anything like that. But if at least nowadays speed's more plentiful on the waiver wire. I mean, consistent playing time to go with that speed is tough to get. So maybe that's why people went hard after Bazzano. And so I don't know. The surface stats look bad because he was hitting 188 last week, but he walked more than he struck out. He had 2 steals, still had 3 runs, 2 RBIs. So he was relatively productive, and he kind of got BABIP the last week a little bit. Because with that average being so low. So I think Bazzano could end up doing well, and the Guardians don't really have any. I know Gabriel Arias was kind of in his way, I think, and then Brito didn't really work out. So it seems like Bazzano could have a pretty long leash at the second base job, and if he struggles a little bit, then maybe they send him down, but probably not at this point. So I think his PT should be safe for a while. But those prices were way too much for me, even if I did want him, I think.
Yeah, they said when they called him up, he'd be the regular second baseman, which was huge. I watched at least 2 of his games in Sacramento this last week. He's actually way better, to your point, way better than the numbers showed. The at-bats are really good for a young ball player. There's a world, I think, once he starts hitting regularly, he'd be a really good top-of-the-order guys to get on base and cause chaos in front of JRAM and company. I think they just want him to get comfortable where he's at right now. So, yeah, he's a good ball player. I think he's a very good real-life ball player, probably. For me, fantasy, it's tricky. I didn't need a lot of middle infield help, given I did pick up a middle infielder in a couple spots this week we'll talk about. But I didn't want to spend a bazillion dollars for Bazzano. So, we did things a little different around my parts. All right, the fourth most added player in online championships. Whew, I wonder what people, how people feel about this one. Kyle Finnegan picked up in 158 online championships, as high as 167, as low as a dollar, average of 28. So at 28 and below, I can live with that. That's fine. In the main event, Finnegan should have been widely. No, he's picked up in 55 leagues, as high as 111, as low as $8, average of 42. All right, for people that are not familiar with what was taking place here, Will Vest, IL, Kenley Jansen, day-to-day with a lower body and like an oblique type thing going on, multiple Kenley Jansen things. Sunday Night Baseball, though, if you're watching TV, Kyle Finnegan pitched the eighth in a 7-1 game. Kenley Jansen would have been used in the ninth, they said, if it was close. When I saw Finnegan come in a 7-1 game, I lowered all of my Finnegan bids, all of them, to like, I think in most of my leagues, I was anywhere like between $8 and $11. That's where my Kyle Finnegan world lived. Maybe I left a couple high and I forgot. For the most part, I lowered all of them. Ben, what are your thoughts on A, Kyle Finnegan as a pickup, I guess, and B, when you see some of these large prices, was it some people enjoying their Sunday? Totally fine. We don't judge that here on this show. That's fine. But that's what it feels like right about now.
I agree. I remember looking at the Tigers box score and seeing that eighth inning appearance, like you mentioned, for Finnegan. So in my two mains, they're the ones, or actually, no, this is different. So I got Lats in my Fab League or my auction, the Listener League, where I had Junis. So I kind of covered my RP2 for now there. My other main event, I had Junis. I wasn't able to get Lats there, and I was kind of in the ballpark for a closer, but because it wasn't a sure thing for Finnegan to have the role, because like you said, they ended up saying, they being the Tigers, that Kenley would have been available for the game if they needed him last night, which is a good sign. I didn't want to prioritize Finnegan as like a top RP ad. The only spot I really did that was where my main event, where I have Jansen on it. And I had him, I think my bid was like a 64 at one point, because I had a lot of fab left. I'm like, I just want to make sure I don't have to go into the fab garbage bin for closers if Kenley does get hurt and I miss out on Finnegan, because Will Vest is out of the picture now. But then I saw the eighth inning appearance and I lowered it to like 34, my bid on Finnegan, and I ended up losing him by a dollar. So I'm not upset. I had to go back in because I forgot I had the bid on for Finnegan, because I was checking my fab and I did it quickly. So I'm not too upset with that. And also at the same time, so I'm talking about like myself, just like my situation, but Finnegan, so a reason why I was fine with lowering the bids and not being too aggressive is that he has 13 Ks and 10 walks. I think I told you guys before Sunday, you guys being Ryan and yourself, he had like a 3% K minus walk, Finnegan. Yeah. So he was due to get crushed. His whip's twice as high as his ERA. It's 0.5 ERA and a 1.20 whip. Both good numbers, but he's going to have a blow up here anytime soon, Finnegan. He's had, yeah, he's been a solid closer for the Nationals in the past, but he always had whip problems or ERA problems. Actually, his ERA, it's always been the whip for Finnegan, so I'll leave it at that. But yeah, once the news came out, and I to your point, I think people just didn't adjust to the news. They didn't see it, and it was late in their defense. It was a 9 o'clock probably Eastern time, and within the last hour before Fab. So it makes a lot more sense if you had Kenley like I did. That's why I was a little more aggressive there with my bids. But if you just needed an RP and you didn't have Kenley, I don't think he should have been a top target, Finnegan.
Yeah, and like I liked him on like Friday when I knew the news was coming. I even mentioned it to Ryan on the Fab show. I'm like, hey, they've kind of been whispering that Kenley's not 100%, and then like Will Vest is banged up. Like Finnegan could slide into a team like the Tigers are a good ball club. There could be saves here, and so like this is the guy. Like we're talking about all these specs, and that was before they announced Vest on the IL, and then they actually said the quiet part out loud about Kenley, and I was like, well, there goes our cheap stabs at Finnegan. And then when I saw that eighth inning roll, like I was sitting here answering questions on the Discord for Fab, and I'm like, all right, time to lower those bids, unfortunately. But just keep it in mind that, yeah, Finnegan's probably the guy, but to Ben's point, it has not been effective is the best. All right, so yes, it's been effective technically, but smoke and mirrors is what we'll go with on this one. All right, a guy that has not shown smoke and mirrors, it's more, do you trust the Texas Rangers? It's Jacob Lats. He has legit been their best reliever all season. I remember when I've talked about it a few times on my shows, when I had Greg Jewett on this very show, Bench with Bubba, And he said, Latch is the guy they want. That's the guy the team loves. And it seemed like that was it was kind of in the makings. And then Junis gets the three saves. He's the big fat target. No saves for 3 weeks. Now Latch is, I think, has four saves in a row. Latch went in 128 online championships. Jacob Latch was a max of 222, Ben. A low of 8, which for an OC, a low of 8, that's pretty big considering he was widely available. Average of $74 for Jacob Latch in OCs. Now, when we're talking the main events, rostered everywhere, Ben. That's the crazy part, because I don't even think he's available in my AC at all either. So 15s, Jacob Latch is gone. But in OCs, picked up in 128 leagues. That goes to show you certain things. And I'll just leave it at that. So what were your thoughts on the money being spent on Jacob Latch? Because obviously you couldn't where you were, but what about where they were in 12-teamers?
Like I said, it's cutthroat in those 15-team streets, Bubba. It's tough out there. Yeah, so I kind of mentioned Latch when I was talking about Finnegan just a minute ago. And so I mentioned it during that spiel on Finnegan, how I had Junis. So I don't know. Like, Latch has better stats than Junis does, at least in terms of strikeouts. But just the fact that Junis had three saves in a week and they have stopped going to him for saves, it has to have you a little worried about Latch being the closer going forward. Like, it seems like he is, because I think he's gotten the last three saves for the Rangers now, Latch. And then, three appearances in a row for Latch, three saves. One was a multi-inning game versus the Yankees, which in that game, I thought for sure when Latch went in for the eighth that they would have given Junis the ball in the ninth and they just kept him in, which is fine. I mean, it worked. But 15-3 K to walk ratio for Latch in 17 innings. He's a lefty, but it's fine. He's pitching well. Definitely has some good fortune because he has five hits allowed only in 17 innings. So the BABIP has to be below 200 for him. And so that's going to regress a little bit. So you might get a blow up if you did add Latch. But those max bids are tough for him in the OCs. 74 average. It's got to be more than what people paid in the main event for him. If we were to go back and look at the prior week or two when he was added after those saves.
Well, because he speculated early on, I'd imagine.
Yeah, because he had that first save, and then people were like, okay, well, let's see if he's worth something, because it seemed like they would still go to Junis because he's the right-hander. But for whatever reason, they decided Junis wasn't it. And I mean, if you look at his underlying stats, Junis isn't getting any strikeouts, whereas Latch actually is. So maybe the Rangers are seeing that as well. But he's definitely like an RP3 and a 12, I'd imagine, Latch. So
yep.
If you're really behind in saves, maybe that's why you'd pay up a little bit to get him. But I don't know. It's just like I said, as being someone who added Junis in a couple spots and then it was just a waste of fab, I don't really trust the Rangers to stick to a guy anytime soon.
Yeah, I added him in the Vegas 12 that we do, Bubba and the Bloom. I think it's the only place I got him. Got him for like, we'll recap, like $64 or something. I need saves desperately, right, in that league. So we're taking the shot. And then I just wanted to add on to, like, you're talking about Latch skills and how that could be like Junis, to be fair. He has a 3.4% K to walks. I'd say he has a 10.3% strikeout rate. He has a 152 BABIP. So his skills are even worse than Jacob Latch. And that's why Latch might get the nod on this one. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see how it holds up there in Texas. Another speculative closer, Rico Garcia of the Baltimore Orioles. Rico Garcia was picked up on 127 online championships, as high as $115, as low as a dollar. Average of 22. He went in 12 main events. He was probably already widely rostered there, because in reality, Rico Garcia, one of the best relievers in all of baseball this year. He was as high as 176, as low as $12, with an average of 38 in main events. Ben, I had my bids in for Garcia. I had him just behind, I can't remember who it was now. We'll go over that here pretty soon, but he was one of my top options if available out there. The guy has a 0.61 ERA, 0.34 WHIP, a BABIP of 0, so that's not sustainable, obviously, but 24.5% K to walk with a near 33% strike rate. He's been filthy, absolutely filthy. So what's your thoughts on the Rico Garcia excitement?
The other thing you left out too, Bubba, was he had 100% left on base. So that BABIP and that left on base are going to go in opposite directions pretty time soon. One positive, though, 55% ground ball rate for Rico, and his swing strike rate is like 16%, I think, is what I saw. 16.8, so pretty elite numbers there. So he has been nasty. The issue, though, with him is I don't know if Helsley will be out for a while. I think the MRI results came back clean.
Saying he'll be back. He already started throwing.
Yeah, so it's kind of, there's been a bunch of these guys. It was like Brad Keller was one. Well, Robert Suarez already rostered. There's someone else who was a temporary add. At the Cubs situation, Palencia's back already. So I think Rico kind of just falls into that same mold of temporary injury replacement. Of course, I think it matters more if you did have Helsley on your team than kind of like what I said with Finnegan and me having Jensen. Jensen, you kind of want to go after him a little bit harder. But $22 is fine if maybe you get like a week worth of saves, a week and a half for Rico, then it could be valuable. 22 is a pretty cheap average. The 115, I hope that team has Helsley. If not, then there's issues. But yeah, he's been nasty to your point. Just hopefully the regression doesn't hit when you have him on your team, because it will hit a little bit, you know, he's been nasty. But just like, of course, Helsley could have a setback, but at least it's a cheap chance that people took on Rico.
Yep, like that's where I had him. I think he was in the either it was like $8 to $12 range for me. I'm like, okay, because I do believe Helsley will be back soon, hopefully. But again, every chance to a potential save is there. And I was more excited about going after Garcia for cheap when Kittredge got absolutely annihilated on Sunday, because that fear kind of left my head for a few minutes. Again, doesn't mean he won't get a shot, but that committee changed a bit in my mind. All right, Nathaniel Lowe of the Cincinnati Reds. This is a really good one to see here. Nathaniel Lowe has picked up an 114 online championships, as high as 59, as low as a dollar average of 17. When it comes to the OCs, he's picked up in 7 OCs, as high as 68, as low as 17. We talked about him last week as one of the most added players in OCs that to look for in main events to look for in OCs this week, because Ben, he keeps hitting it and hitting it well in the middle of that Reds lineup, at least until Eugenio Suarez is out. So what's your thoughts on Nathaniel Lowe adds this week?
I think it makes sense. It seems like, I don't know. Well, yeah, who knows how long Lowe will be in the lineup, but I'm sure they could actually make some room for him, they being the Reds. I don't know. Well, Stewart's kind of secured at first, and then they still like Hayes' defense, so it could get tight once Suarez is back, but so I wouldn't, at this point, you've missed two really good weeks of Nathaniel Lowe, 5 homers, which is kind of wild to say, average about 300. He looks rejuvenated. I wonder how many of those homers, I don't have it up right now, but how many of those homers are Cincinnati aided, but he's shown that he could be a good hitter in the past, Nathaniel Lowe. So it makes sense to take a stab, but it's hopefully for those who added him, it's he's around for a while. I missed out on him last main event and the 15s in general, because I didn't really need first base help or corner help, but I'm not sure who would be a good example if someone lost a corner, but Lowe could be a pretty good fill-in for now. And if something happens with PT, he's an easy cut at least. So just hopefully he stays hot forever. Added him this week.
What if I told you that all 5 of Nathaniel Lowe's home runs came in Cincinnati this season? Would that interest
Okay,
you?
Then. Actually, now I have to look up. That's very interesting, Bubba.
I think they finished the week in Great American this week, if I remember correctly.
All right, so if he qualified in MLB, his stat cast is very elite. Let's go to the homer by park. I love looking at this in the offseason. So he has 5 home runs, expected of 3.3. So about – what's the barrel rate look like? His barrel rate, 14%. He has 7 barrels. So 5 for 7 is in line with the averages that Ryan always talks about. So Cincinnati, he has 5. It's a lot of 2s and 3s, but it's such a small sample that it can vary a little bit. So he's definitely got helped out a little bit, I think, by those homers in Cincinnati. A couple of them have been no doubt. One was a real no doubter.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think, yeah, it's very park dependent, but he's hitting the ball well, low. So I can't really critique him too hardly. He's definitely earned his results so far.
And I'll say this much, it's 4 games in Wrigley to start the week, so you'll see what happens there with weather. You never know. But the weekend against Houston, subject to change, is Mike Burrows, Arrigetti, Bolton. There's home runs to be had there. And then next week, when at home, he gets Mikolas, Jake Irvin, and Foster Griffin. So the 6 upcoming games in Great American, wouldn't be shocked if he has 2 to 3 home runs in that environment. Not to mention the team's bullpens, especially the Nats bullpen. Not great. So it should be plenty of offense to be had there.
One more thing, Bud, before we move on. So he's had an issue with ground balls in his career. He's a career high 15.2% launch angle right now, which would that would help a lot.
That would play in that ballpark, some would say.
Yep.
All right. The next most added player in OCs in 113 leagues is Sean Burke. He's picked up in those 113 leagues as high as 113, as low as a dollar, average of 33. I don't know how he was available in 113 leagues. He's available in two main events, and he went for as high as 171, as low as 50. So those are the two prices. 171 and 50, I guess how that works out there. Average of 111 for Sean Burke. But this is a guy that I still don't know how he was available in two main events. Just been really, really good. ERA 272, ratios are good. K to walk is solid. It's been three in runs or less and all but one start. Like, how is he available? I don't really know, to be totally honest with you. Especially in this environment of pitching we keep talking about. It's pretty crazy. And this week he gets the Seattle Mariners. Next week he gets the Royals. Then Seattle again, and then a two-step against Minnesota and Detroit. Like, that's a heck of a month of make coming his direction. So what's your thoughts on Sean Burke?
Yeah, this one went under the radar for me because I've been in on Davis Martin. I had him in a couple DCs. Yeah, so I've been playing Martin.
You're smart. I like that.
At those prices, Bubba, it's like, why not? He's going to be in the rotation. He's young. He could break out a little bit, and that's kind of been the case so far, knock on wood. But, yeah, I'm impressed by Sean Burke's numbers. Like I said, I've been unaware of how he's been doing. The only thing that I'm looking at, I see in his profile, is a swing strike rate. It's actually a career low, 8.5%. It's gone down all 3 years he's been in the majors. So Burke could have regression coming for him. The K rate has actually gone down as well with the declining swing strike rates, but the walk's the best of his career. So maybe it's more of like a command change he's made to his pitching style that's reduced the number of base runners via the walk. And the BABIP's kind of low, 259 for Burke, excuse me, but he's also being helped out by a pretty low homer to fly ball at 6.8%. That should regress up. And he's not a major ground ball pitcher either. So he could get the xFIP is 3.79. If his average is if his ERA is at 3.8 or so, like his xFIP saying, Burke will have value. So it makes sense that he was widely rostered in 15s. And now, of course, the 12s are catching up like they always do. But yep. I think he has limited upside for a 12. Maybe it's like a streaming thing or people just seeing the results. But there's a chance that he could regress a little bit and give back some of those of course, you add Burke after all this good run, and then if he has a regression game, it's going to kill you. But just be careful of the tough matchups. But based on the schedule you said, I don't think nothing's too crazy coming up.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet coming in his direction if nothing gets out of hand. Another guy that's lost rostered in all the main events, but he was the next most added player in online championships, and that's Nick Martinez of the Tampa Bay Rays, picked up in 111 OCs, as high as 72, as low as a dollar, average of 20. Talked about him a lot on the Fab show. He had a two-step this week, which I think definitely inclined people to pick up Nick Martinez as he's set to face the Jays and the Red Sox. You know, not the easiest two-step, but not bad. But it's 200 runs or less in every start this season, Ben. Strikeouts have been okay, not great. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on this one with Nick Martinez, but so far so good. That's why he's rostered everywhere in 15s. But what are your thoughts on the 12s catching up? Because outside of a two-step, I'd be terrified to use him in a 12.
Yeah, a lot of what I said about Sean Burke applies to Nick Martinez, and even worse. So the K-minus walk is only 10%. I think it was 15 for Burke, 10% for Martinez. His BABIP's 225, left on base is 91.5%. So both are going to regress in opposite directions. Homer fly ball rate is low for him as well. The ERA indicators are higher for Martinez. I did start him in the main event because of the two start week. He also has a pretty low swing strike rate compared to what he's had recently since he's returned from Japan. Martinez 7.9% so far on the swing strike. So that's going to keep the K's down. But if he's home in Tampa, it's going to help. That's a good pitcher's park, at least. So he has that on his side. Whereas, it's not called U.S. Cellular anymore, right? In Chicago, it's something else probably by now.
Nick Martinez is in Tampa.
No, I'm talking about Sean Burke.
Chicago. They call it something else now, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm like stuck in – I feel like everyone's frozen in time with the stadium names.
Because they changed too much because everyone's greedy. But yes, sorry.
Yes, it's annoying. So I think at least Martinez has the trap going for him, whereas Burke does not. But I don't want to rely on the stadium too much. So this is, I'm even less optimistic about Martinez in 12s than I am Burke, even though I do roster Martinez in the main event. But this is the nature of 15. So I think the regression game is even more likely for those who added Nick Martinez this week. Hopefully it's after the two-step because I did start him, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's hope it's after the two-step because that's why everyone added him. But I guess I don't have any shares, so maybe not after the two-step.
I think it was a decent matchup, though, too. Like, they weren't doing that well.
It's the Jays and Red Sox. It's like teams that have disappointed, but at the same time, I would not be shocked if they woke up type thing.
Well, actually, no, Martinez survived tonight because he
– he did survive, yeah.
Yep, so he got the win, actually. So it was a good start to the two-step.
Yeah, great start to the two-step. So we'll see as he takes on Fenway this weekend to see how that goes. But all right, this one, I pay attention to playing time quite a bit. I know Bryce Matthews is playing a lot. He was the next most added player in 12s. Bryce Matthews was picked up in 110 online championships, as high as $69, as low as a buck, average of 14. Bryce Matthews was picked up in 54 main events, one of the most added players in the main events this week, as high as 59, as low as 10 bucks, average of 31. Bryce Matthews is the primary center fielder now for the Houston Astros for the time being until things are change, obviously. Bryce Matthews hit 217 on the season, but has hit safely in five of his last six games with a couple home runs and a steal. So last week was big. Playing time was awesome. I guess people are hoping that this former high-end prospect has figured things out. What were your thoughts on Bryce Matthews this week? Because contrary to the last two pitchers we've discussed, this was a high priority for a lot of main event drafters.
Yeah, it was. I believe I had at least one team where I had Matthews in a bid list, but then I kind of pulled back because of his 36% strikeout rate that he has so far. Yep. And I could just see, like, it's like a hot streak. The average has already come down, like he said, to 217. I think I'm seeing 221 on Fangraphs right now. So either way, it's been horrible. The swing strike is 16%. So it'd be awesome if he was a pitcher. And then looking at the schedule, the Astros face the Dodgers to start the week, but at least they're in Cincinnati, and Matthews is playing every day. He has power and speed, but once I saw the strikeout rate, I kind of got turned off from being aggressive on him. I think I had him at the bottom of the list and I didn't get him anywhere, which I'm fine with, but it's just because he's playing a lot. He was one of the, if you sorted by at bats and over the last couple of weeks, he's near the top, and that's kind of what put my eyes on Matthews. But just looking at the striker rate, like I said, is just too high for me, and I figured you add him and then you get like a 2-for-18 with 9 strikeouts or something like that, and it just kind of tanks your average. So I was just trying to avoid that.
Yep, no, I agree. I was surprised. Like I said, I knew he was playing a lot. I pay attention to that. I covered the AL West weekly looking for playing time for HQ. I've mentioned Bryce Matthews. They were trying to play him in the outfield and all over the infield. They're trying to make things work, but the production just hasn't been there. So I was surprised by the excitement level. Yes, it was a big week. And maybe he's figured it out. I'm not going to deny that. It kind of took me aback for a second that this is where we were at this point in time. All right, next most added player in online championships, Jansen Junk, picked up in 109 leagues, as high as 71, as low as a dollar. This gets average of 15 in main events. He was picked up in seven main events, as high as 56, low as 33, average of 45 for Jansen Junk. He had a two-step this week, which was a big factor in this for the 12s because he was already widely rostered in 15s, of course. Jansen Junk took on the Phillies. The Phillies won 1-0. Bryce Harper homer, so not a bad start for Jansen Junk. Like, you'll take that right now. He gets the Washington Nationals later this week. That's the start you were kind of hoping for with Jansen Junk. So on paper, so far, so good. He had 6 Ks and no walks tonight as well. So what are your thoughts when you look at Jansen Junk, who's actually thrown really well this season?
He is. So when I was listening to the RotoWire 2-star week pod and just writing everybody down, he was someone I was looking to target, but of course, I think he was rostered in all my 15-teamers, so I couldn't add Junk anywhere. But looking at his stats, he literally falls into the Sean Burke, Nick Martinez bucket of very horrible K-minus walks, lucky homer to fly ball, and estimators that are fine for his ERA, but they're like the XFIP's 4.2, so there's going to be some regression. the BABIP's kind of low, 248. The left on base is low, or is actually low, so it's kind of hurting him a little bit, but the BABIP's helping Junk. The Phillies have been so bad, so he survived that start, and the Nationals, I think, have been the worst team versus righties by WRC plus over the last 3 weeks or so. So in a 12-team league, you add him for this week, and then you probably cut him. I wouldn't hold him past this. In a 15, maybe you do because of the results have been there. But going forward, I think he's going to get blown up, just like I kind of said with Martinez and Sean Burke. But so far, so good. And just cut him after this week, like I said.
Yeah, in 15s, you can stick it around and see what happens. In 12s, I'd be terrified right now. This is the 12-only one here. Jack Perkins adding 105 OCs, as high as 214, as low as $18. Average of 87, already rostered main events. He is the new closer in Sacramento for now. He has 3 saves. He's looked absolutely filthy, Ben. You were on him last week. You were already on this train trying to acquire Jack Perkins. Any other thoughts that may have changed things, as this was seemed like a foregone conclusion for whatever was left was going to get picked up this week?
Yeah, so the other closers we were talking about earlier, Finnegan, Latz, Garcia, Perkins is by far the best of those guys. I put him in my lineups in all my DCs where I had Perkins, which is like 2 or 3. So I felt good at least. No mains with Perkins, unfortunately, but he has awesome stuff. 17 Ks, 3 walks, and 13 innings. Hopefully the A's use him like a traditional closer. He had a 2-inning save at least one time. His first 2 saves were 2 innings, and then he had a traditional save versus the Royals on the 30th. So I'm a big fan of Perkins. I wish I had him in like that one-man event where I'm starting. God, I forget who I added. It's ugly. We'll go over it though. But it's about time the OCs caught up and added him. It's good they finally got their act together.
Yes. I was happy. I think I got him in one league. I can't remember which one. We'll talk about it. I was shocked to have him available anywhere because I figured going in to do my fab, like there's zero chance I can acquire a Jack. Like I said, Latz I like a lot too. Perkins I like more. The fact that either one was available anywhere for me, very excited about. Got them where they were. So we move on in that situation. Last 12-teamer I'm going to discuss, because we've talked about a lot of the players that are here. We'll switch over to 15s in a second, but this one will cross over. Andrew Vaughn was picked up in 98 online championships. High as 46, low as a buck, average of 17. Vaughn was picked up in 19 main events by teams that dropped him when he got hurt. As high as 111, as low as 22, average of 60 in the main events. Andrew Vaughn was activated from the IL on Monday. We knew it was going to be Monday or Tuesday as of fab time, so this is why people added Andrew Vaughn. I don't think – I could have just missed it. I don't think Vaughn was available in any of my leagues because that name just never stood out to me. Could be wrong. We'll go over our fab pickups in a minute. I also didn't really need first base or corner where I was, but what are your thoughts on the Andrew Vaughn excitement? Because like Jake Bowers has been serviceable. I'm not going to say he's been great, but he's been very, very serviceable in the time being. You still have Gary Sanchez there, who, like, being sarcastic, we know who Gary Sanchez is. But like, there is moving parts still in Milwaukee's where I'm going at here, where Vaughn was not like lighting the world on fire before he got hurt.
Yeah, he should have safe playing time with the Brewers. I was trying to think of if he was drafted in every league, but yeah, the injury happened after the season started. Because this is actually one of the few years I don't think I have Vaughn on any team. So he was always he's always a great at least DC target late in the 200s, early 300s. But I kind of just got sick of him after like years of projections looking good for him, and then it's not really meeting those projections. But actually, it's only been 4 plate appearances for him, so he got hurt right away. I kind of said this before with Lowe. First corner has been, I think, okay this year at least. I know people hate a third base come draft time, but Vaughn's a first baseman only, and I think a lot of first basemen have been fine. So if you needed a corner, it made complete sense to add him. He's more of a 15-team play anyway than an OC play, but he's going to play all the time. He has 20 homer upside, which is a little bit less now that he's missed a month. So $17 in the OCs for Vaughn makes sense. 60, yeah, seeing the price difference in the mains versus the OCs, it's kind of what I just said. Like in a 15, Andrew Vaughn could be a very underrated player, kind of like Nathaniel Lowe is, but I don't know. You mentioned Bowers being there, and he kind of ate into Vaughn's playing time last year, even when Vaughn had that hot start once they acquired him from the White Sox. But I think he still has the potential to be fine. He's 28, so he's kind of in his prime still. He hit the ball really hard last year, Vaughn. So it could pay off. Just I wouldn't get tied to him in a 12. I think the ceiling is kind of capped on him.
Yeah, no, I agree. In a 12, it's tricky. He's not like a – he's still better than some other options, but he's not an everyday guy, if that checks out to anybody, where in a 15, he's at worst a corner infielder probably every week. Like, you're playing Andrew Vaughn unless it's just a stupid platoon situation there, which is always possible. So, yeah, wanted to mention him as one. We're switching over to main events now to give people an idea of what might be coming your way in 12s down the road here. And we've talked about Bezzana, Garcia, Finnegan, Matthews. The next most added player in NFBC main events, J.J. Bleda, picked up in 54 of 60 main events, as high as 53, as low as $3, average of 20. He was picked up in 33 OCs, as high as 27, as low as a buck, average of 8. J.J. Bleda already went deep on Monday, so you're already getting your money's worth potentially here. After his home run tonight, he's hitting 353 with 3 home runs, 5 runs scored, and 4 RBIs in 22 plate appearances. So he's running very hot at the moment, Ben. And then, like we talked about, Nathaniel Lowe, this weekend and the beginning of next week's series at Great American are pretty sweet. So J.J. Bleda stood out a bit. What were your thoughts on J.J. Bleda?
Yeah, I kind of overlooked Bleda. I did have need for a utility bat one spot. I don't think I had a bid for him. Everything I said about Lowe and Vaughn kind of applies to Bleda. 20 homer potential bat. Bleda, he'll probably hurt your average, because in his full year he hit 243, and then last year 212, which was an up and down year for him. But his 2024 line of 74 runs, 20 homers, 60 RBIs, 243, that's fine. It's a 15 team line, though. It's not really a 12 team line, but you mentioned the good schedule for Bleda and the Reds, so maybe, and it paid off, like you said already. He hit the homer tonight, but he'll probably be one of the most dropped in a couple of weeks, I'd imagine, at least in the OCs. It's just weird that it was weird when they acquired Bleda, and then it looked like he was going to play over Marte potentially, and now look where we are. It's kind of still how it is here in May, but what helps Bleda is that there's only two other lefties, Lowe being one of them, in the Reds lineup, and then you have Ellie's a switch hitter, and I think they want that balance, so he'll platoon Bleda, but if in these righty heavy weeks, he's a good stream. But I just wouldn't think he's going to get tied to your roster in a 12 teamer.
No, he's always been a 15 guy for me. I've liked him in 15s most of the time. Like
when he's been in DCs a bunch in the past.
Yeah, like Bleda will have those moments where he'll have some like couple week streaks, like maybe what he's doing right now, where he is super productive, and then he has weeks where he just disappears completely. And maybe that, I don't know if that ever will change, but that's what he makes him a 15 team stream from time to time. All right, with Pete Fairbanks hitting the IL, we have a potential committee taking shape in Miami. Tyler Phillips was picked up in 43 main events, as high as 68, as low as 2, average of 27. He was picked up in 52 OCs as well, as high as 55, as low as 1, average of 19. I'll just throw this. We'll just do a duel here. The good doctor, Calvin Fauché, was added in 26 main events, as high as 46, as low as a buck, an average of 15. He was averaging 20 OCs, as high as 45, as low as a buck, as average of 9. So a lot of talking going on there. But where I'm going with this is Phillips picked up the first save opportunity. The good doctor got the second. Phillips pitched 3 innings the other day. The good doctor pitched the 8th. On Monday, the good doctor pitched the 7th as the team was losing. It's all over the board, is what I kind of think it was going to be anyways. I liked Phillips over Fauché. Just I think he was the better of the two options. Don't expect a whole lot altogether. What were your thoughts on bidding on either one of these guys in Miami?
I was also team Tyler Phillips. I did start him in a DC, I think, this week where I have him. I'm in a couple spots.
Dude, that DC is ridiculous. The amount of spec guys you have that are actually potential closers right now is...
Yeah, like, that was the one
I
actually...
You almost have a starting 9 of specs.
Yeah, it's wild. I definitely sat him in that one, but I think I felt another one where I had to play him. Hopefully it's a save. But then as you were talking, I remember to what I say every week last year when we would talk about the Enriquez guy, Fauché... Yeah. Yep. Who was the other loser that people wasted fab on? I forget. The Marlins do not have a closer unless it's Peter.
You hate
unless
it's Pete Fairbanks. Closing. Yep.
Yeah, I just remember that. So I'm glad I didn't get Phillips or Fauché anywhere, except for those DCs where you talked about before. But yeah, it's good. If Phelps have you got the save Phelps and they had pitches three innings, which is valuable potentially if he gets a win or something, but you want the save. And then if Flache's pitching the whatever the seventh, the eighth, like you said, it's just not going to happen. So I would just hold on and wait till Fairbanks gets back. And it's one fewer bullpen that we have for saves right now, it looks like.
Yeah, and hopefully the Fairbanks nerve situation isn't too bad. We really haven't gotten an update on that lately, which is kind of strange. I'm going to skip Pedro Páez. He was added because of the catcher carnage this past week. 43 leagues, high as 27, low as a buck. He actually is producing, so I'll give him that. Like, he's playing well when he gets his days behind the plate, but he's – I don't know. Don't get too excited there, but not a bad catcher, 2-15s. Andre Pallante was added in 42 leagues. I know you were talking about streaming him. If you want to discuss him, you can. I was going to go past him, but high of 67, low of 2, average of 12. Did you have anything on Pallante?
Yeah, Bubba, I did add him, and I think I started him. Let me.
Well, they're winning. Lee pitched today, so you got tomorrow.
Oh yeah, he's doing the Tuesday Sunday. Imagine he does lose that Sunday start though. That could very well happen. So before you laugh completely, Pallante over the last 2 weeks has a 19.1% K minus walk, a 12.3 swing strike, a 3.42 Sierra, a 3.40 XFIP, a 3.09 XERA, average EV against of 87 miles per hour. So that's the really good. Here's the bad. 40% ball rate, so that's high. A left on base of 94% and a BABIP of 225. So he has a lot of interesting things going on in his profile lately. And so the skills are kind of there for him. Like, the K rate might be a little elevated, but and the walks are a little high too. But the 19.1% K minus walk has been really good for him. And then I believe the matchups actually aren't that bad either. It was Milwaukee and the Padres, who haven't been the best teams. The Brewers got Churio back, so he'll help them. And the Padres have kind of been mediocre. So it was more of a desperation play in this main event because I have Joe Ryan. Like, the ERA and the WHIP has been bad. I have like Emmett Sheehan on that team, so I kind of want volume to try to hopefully get my ratios down. So that's I wasn't alone though, at least in the main event, because there were a ton of ads. There was it's the max 42 ads. So 2/3 of the leagues were with me in this ad. We could be 2/3 of those leagues are crazy, but I figured it was worth a shot.
No, I remember you were talking about it, so like I could see it. He gets the Royals next week. If you want to hold him, I'd probably be dropping him, but you never know.
Depends
if
on
he
how
gets the starts. If he gets a start skipped, it's a two step, so you got that going for you.
Yeah.
This is what we talked Christian Scott already. Okay, this I need some pointers here. Estuary Ruiz.
Yeah,
was picked up in 38 main events, as high as 57, as low as 5. Average of 16. He was picked up in 18 OCs, high of 53. So surprising there. Estuary Ruiz has played in like 3 of the last 5 or 6 games. So he's not an everyday player. He's hitting 267, 2 homers, 1 steal. Like, there's always been tons of speed with Ruiz. It's the plate discipline is the easiest way I'll say it makes Bryce Matthews look like a professional hitter. What are your thoughts on this Estuary Ruiz love? Because I can get I'll give you everybody a better sense of this. Estuary Ruiz did not play Monday. He played Saturday and Sunday, did not play Friday, played Wednesday, did not play Tuesday. So you're getting hopefully 3 or 4 games a week from Ruiz.
Well, so I think Jason Santu tweeted about Ruiz. He was one of the guys he added in a couple spots this past Sunday. I'm looking at what you're looking at with the Russia resource. It seems like Owen Casey could be the switch for Ruiz, because Ruiz did, so part of the reason, not just playing, but he had 2 homers and a steal last week in 12 at-bats.
Yeah.
And we know the speed that Ruiz has. He's 27 still, so he's not completely washed. Well, his career has kind of been washed, but there's a chance that he can still be productive. He's not that old yet. The Marlins, they have incentive to try to give Casey a shot, but I know he's striking out a ton. Yep. So this is more of a deep league Billy Hamilton flyer almost with Ruiz. I wasn't aware of this shift in PT with Casey in Miami, but it's not someone you would be able to start yet, to your point, because there's not enough playing time I'm not going to expect at least a homer and a steal every week from Ruiz either. Maybe you can expect two steals if he gets enough playing time, but that's asking a lot if you're not a full-time player. So an average of 16, though, in the main isn't going to hurt you. There's definitely has a lot of room for profit, but I don't know. There's a chance that Ruiz will be one of the most dropped in a week or two in the main event anyway. So it's a complete boom or bust pick.
Yeah, like I get speculated. I guess when I'm speculating the dollar values, it's like less than $10 when I speculate. And that's where it struggles. Like Ruiz has to show me some plate discipline to get excited. And I'm not really chasing speed, but if you need speed, I get those factors. I know in Casey probably does need to get his stuff right at AAA. That's not a bad thing either. All right, the next most added player in main events was MJ Melendez. We'll talk about him on my ads this week. Picked up in 34 main events, as high as 22, as low as a buck, average of 8. See, now we're talking my language with this pricing. And 8 OCs, as high as 14, low as a buck, average of 7. Again, my price range here. MJ Melendez has been hitting third primarily every game he's played. He sits versus lefties, gets every start versus righties. The Mets play 5 righties in 6 games this week, not to mention they start out in Coors Field this week. I don't expect his hitting to be this great for this long, but 297, 2 homers through 42 plate appearances. I've always just been an MJ Melendez believer. Like I've loved the skill set. His minor league numbers are stupid. It just has never translated to the big leagues. So if I could take a spec ad on him for cheap, I'm all aboard that train, especially with the schedule he had ahead. So that's where I am. I'm very aware that this could fall beyond flat on because, but let's be honest, Ben, you'll like this. He's wearing the Mets jersey. It's not working for many players right now. So he's hitting third. He should have Juan Soto on base a ton in front of him to help as well.
Yeah, and Bo Bichette as well. I think it's been Soto Bichette 1-2. Yep. I think I had Melendez in a list just because I needed someone. Didn't get him. I've drafted him in the past too, but I think he's just not it, Melendez. He's 27. Well, he's kind of like he's 27, so he still has some prime years left potentially. He's crushing the ball, 97 mile per hour average X velocity, 13.6% barrel rate. His hard hit is 63.6%. But his K rate is 33%. His XBA is 203. So Melendez has been all or nothing, and the results have been almost all. Like there's because the 297 is nice, the 2 homers and 37 at bats. But the rolling X WOBA is so low on Savant when they show that his X WOBA is 288. So he's probably gonna crash and burn like the rest of the team, honestly. So you play him for Coors this week. There's 2 righties, I believe, on the schedule the Mets are facing. So he gets 2 starts there. Hopefully it's a homer or something. Gets lucky with the BABIP, but I don't see this lasting for Melendez. So he'll be it's a good stream. Like you said, you added him, so play him in Coors. But it's pretty likely that he's going to come crashing down soon.
Yep, I'm fully prepared to pull the shoot on that one. All right, I'm going to throw some random names out there for Bryce Eldridge. It was announced he was going to get called up on Monday, which did take place. So he's picked up in 11 main events. As high as 182, as low as a dollar, snuck through a dollar. Average of 68 in OCs. He was picked up in 26 OCs. As high as 267, as low as a dollar, average of 46. He was dropped in 1 OC last night. So, again, someone was not paying attention on Sunday evening. Again, totally understandable. But I think the news came out after FAB, to be honest. No, we found out before FAB. But I did not have Bryce Eldridge available in my leagues, I'm pretty sure. And not to mention util only, and I want him to play every day. I still don't know how this is going to work. If they call him up, they're going to find a way. But like they've already come out on Monday and said Casey Schmidt has earned the right to play every day. So if that's happening, unless it's in the outfield, I don't know how this works. So what are your thoughts on Bryce Eldridge, I guess?
So I have I'm invested in Matt Chapman and Devers and Schmidt in DC. So I hope it doesn't really screw me up. I'm being jealous here. So I hope it doesn't screw me up. I do have Eldridge in the DC, but I think the person who sat tonight was Chapman of all people. Schmidt's playing he's third. Been
just bad enough to do. So
yeah, it's frustrating, but yeah, it's frustrating. The K's are so bad for Eldridge, as you're aware. He's util only. So only some teams can't even play him, which should keep the price down. He was available in one of my mains. I don't think I even it was too, like, the news was too late where I didn't really have time to react to it. But my other two mains where he will be available this week, I have Yordan in one, and the other one I have decent corners. I have Vientos there, who I'd rather just take a flyer on. Vientos, similar profile. Actually, Vientos strikes out less. Go figure. But yeah, Eldridge, definitely a 15-team play. He has the upside to fit a 12-team as well if he gets enough homers. But I'll just have to wait and see. I don't know. He could just struggle like the rest of the team. I don't want that to happen for your sake, but it's very likely. So I don't know. It's a good shot to take, but what were the prices on him again? He was
as high as 182, average is 68 in the mains.
That's a high average, it feels like. But people have been
– OC's average is 46.
That's kind of high for OC's too. But people – I know when Oker was saying on the Waxen pod how he's struggling bad for power, and I was talking to the guilds today about it, and I think it's the lowest homers per game per team since 2015 so far. And it was like just slightly below 2022, which was the down year for offense. So the numbers are showing that power is down. So Eldridge could fix that, but he could hurt your average at the same time. So it's a risky move, and I wouldn't have pumped too much fab into him.
I say a Suzuki just hits a 3-run bomb. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. There you go. I don't really have anything else to stand. Like Jared Jones, people are starting to pick him up. He was picked up in four mains. So if he's sitting around, he's expected back at the end of May, third or fourth week in May. Eric Miller was picked up in 29 mains. He goes on the IL on Monday. So, hey, I've warned everybody just to stay away. Like the way Ben stays away from the Miami bullpen, I have said stay away from the Giants bullpen. That's just been a clear statement for me since I dropped Walker's. Stay away from that one. Anything else stand out to you in Fab this week?
I'll say about Jones. So he was available in my one main event. I think I bid 24 on him. He went for like...
You weren't even close.
I was like, what are we doing? He's like a month away still. And
yeah, I was surprised to see the prices.
When I saw the 267 max, and I think it may have been my league, actually, I laughed almost. I'm like, okay, well, that's good for whoever spent that much money on him, because he could have a setback still. I don't know. Like, yeah, he has decent strikeout upside, but I don't know. It's just people are getting a little crazy, I think, like with their spending. It's just wild to me.
Yeah, like when I looked at the prices, I was like, okay, Jones, I get stashing him. And then it's like picked up in four leagues, as high as 267, average of 163. The low was 75. So for just, like, if there's a setback, that is disastrous. Like, I want Jared Jones to be a thing. Don't get me wrong. But we're talking 2 to 3 weeks to go here, which, yeah, you need to start stashing him. Again, totally understand on the stash part of it. That pricey, and I would have been like you've been, I would have been nowhere close to what was about to take place right there at all.
So. Well, you know what it was too. So I was put onto him from a podcast. So I think whoever listened, it was like it may have been Pull Hitter or FTN. Like someone mentioned him coming back. So I saw he was available. So that's why I was interested. But like I think they just overshot the moon on that one. It was just a little too much, too soon.
Yes, totally agree there. Anybody else you'd like to hit on before we talk about our ad drops for the week?
Elmer Rodriguez was wasted fab because he's going to be sent back down.
Yeah, him and Jake Bennett. Like, Bennett maybe gets one more. I think he's getting – because Sonny Gray's coming back, like, Wednesday or Thursday.
And Rodriguez may not even get – he probably won't even go far enough for a win tomorrow night for the Rangers because he went four innings, four walks in his debut. Great, like, prospect, but I think it's a waste of fab for this week. So, I have him in a DC. I didn't even bother starting Elmer Rodriguez. So, I don't know why people would spend their money on him in main event. Like, he was available to me. I had no interest at all. I'm like, this is a one-week – bullpen game essentially.
Yeah, like I love the skills. I have him in DC. He's like, he would have been in that conversation. He would have been behind Scott and Henderson for me. But if they'd have been like, hey, Elmer's here for at least a month, okay, like we could talk about this. But Elmer Rodriguez, the Jake Bennett's, the, you know, it's fun, it's nice, they're in the player pool now. So if you want to stash in like a week or two for hopefully way less than the Jared Jones stashes, I get it. But that's where I start to be on those fronts. All right, if you're ready, let's recap our fab for the week.
All right, one second. I'll start again with the Listener League auction. So this is where I got one of the times I got Christian Scott, dropped Jacob Junis, 68 to 52. So that worked out nicely. And I'm low on money here, so that was my only bid of the week. My backup was Keith Cavalli, who actually would have got. He went for 63. I had him for 64 as a backup. So I'll take Scott in that case. And then New Jersey main event. So this is where Jared Jones, he had the eye of the max here. He went for 267 here. I think this is where I bid 24 on him. This is who I added for my closer. This is Ugly Bubba. I dropped Sam Bachman of the Angels, and I added Ryan Zephyrhan, 18 to 15. So that was a fine
after all the conversations we had.
Yeah, I had like four guys at $18, and I ended up with a Zephyrhan, who I had him in DC's last year, and he pitched like a closer in the one of the weekend games. He pitched like the ninth and the tenth. So I'm like, okay, maybe they go to him. Yates is who knows, and I don't trust Ben Joyce to hold up. So I think it's worth a shot. I'll probably be fabbing someone next week as it is. And this is where I got Andre Pallante, dropped Javier Baez 12-1. And I was a little too aggressive on Pallante, as you can see, 12-1. And then I had Matthew Liberatore drop Yusei Kikuchi 4-0. This is in desperate need of pitching help, and Liberatore probably won't provide it. So yep. This is my big win of the week, I thought. So this is main number two, the hybrid main. Got Logan Henderson drop Merrill Kelly 124-111. So I think I literally fist pumped when I saw the winning bid and the runner up. So that. And then, of course, earlier when we talked about Henderson, I ended up sitting him versus the Yankees this week. It's a long-term play for me with him. And Merrill Kelly, I don't know if I was the only drop or not, but he's just been horrible. And 15 walks in 19 innings, 14 – he has more walks than Ks, a whip over 2, an ERA over 9. He's just a mess. And then so this is also annoying. So I got Henderson, which was a high, and then I added – Miguel Amaya dropped Mark Vientos 3-0 because I have the goose on this team. So it was a mixed fab result night there, mixed highs and lows. And then main three is nice because I have Tariq Skubal in this main. For now. I got Christian Scott again, dropped Rhett Lauder 114-86. Nothing. So note, listeners, I almost doubled my Christian Scott bid for the main event versus the listener league, and it worked out in my favor. Yeah. And that was the only ad there. So I kind of just went after Scott. I got Churio back here, but then I'll be dropping Skubal probably for a pitcher next week. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that because some people think I'm always kidding, but to hear someone else mention it, and we talk about it in the Discord a lot, is it happened last year and so far this year, like those listener league fabs, it feels like you're in a big 15-team league. Like people are always bidding up. Like the pricing's wild. People are always bidding. It's not like some of the other, listener leagues that I'm a part of the TGFBIs of the world and stuff, that pricing is much, much different. So still very competitive to that sense. All right, my turn. The Vegas listener league, 12-teamer. This is wild. First, Jared Jones went 69 in this league unopposed to our buddy Timothy, which is wild he went unopposed. But again, I wasn't looking to stash yet because I picked up Jacob Latz. Dropped Caleb Thielbar 66-33. I needed closing bat, obviously, if I'm dropping Thielbar. Picked up Logan Henderson, dropped Kirby Yates. Now that could backfire, but I'm still not the biggest Yates guy right now. 56-38. So I like both of those bids. I thought that was insanely cheap for Logan Henderson, $56 with the runner up at 38. And then this is the middle infielder I was joking about earlier that I did pick up. Like I didn't really want to spend a lot, but a cheap. But I think productive and the playing time is more than available here. Brian Rocchio was very much on my radar this week, where available, and it was primarily in 12s because he's gone in 15s. But he entered today at 268, 3 homers, 3 steals, striking out less than 9% of the time, playing every single day, switch hitter. Not going to light the world on fire, but this is a guy that I think has more pop than we think, can run. I'm going to be very productive for the middle infields. So I got him for $7, 0 unopposed. I dropped Luis Garcia Jr. of the Nationals. He's got the wrist injury. He's going in for testing, plus it's full platoon there. And I like Luis, but even look at the stat lines. He's a streamer at best right now, sadly to say. That's where we are with Luis Garcia Jr. And then I keep picking up small shares of Nolan Arenado, where I need corner infield help, and got him $3 unopposed. Dropped Justin Crawford, who I have plenty of outfielders, and in a 12, he's not really cutting it at this point in time. In my Vegas AC, quiet week, but I picked up MJ Melendez as a stream, dropped Juan Brito 11-4. So I'll take that. And I picked up, after you mentioned him last week in your your text with me and Ryan. Eric Fede, I started looking at him in a lot of 15s. Picked him up, dropped Victor Vodnik, $7 unopposed. Like, honestly, with the way pitching is, I am wondering if I really missed something here on Eric Fede because he went unopposed in this league, and this is the league I couldn't get pitching to save my life earlier, Ben. Like, I get it. This is kind of probably goes in that Sean Burke bucket you were talking about, but this is also a 15. It's been 3 earned runs or less in every start. He went 7 innings in his last start. You know, it's 22 Ks to 11 walks. It's not great by any means. I'm not sitting there pumping my chest for Eric Fede, but in a 15-team league where pitching is extremely scarce, he stands out to me. He gets the Angels this week in Anaheim, and the next week could have a two-step against the Royals and the Cubs. Like, again, not ideal, but that plays in a 15 to me. So I was looking at Eric Fede quite a bit and kind of opened my eyes to him when the week before we were chatting about him. In my OLAC, I picked up Rico Garcia, dropped Joe Cunell 9-0. Picked up Tyler Phillips, dropped Peter Lambert 7-0. And then I picked up Marcelo Meyer. I dropped Tyson Kim 6-1. I like Kim, but that was pure tilting. And then talking about Max Marcelo Meyer on the recent Fab preview with Ryan. A lot of right-handed pitching cups, even starting versus a lefty tonight. Liking what we're seeing there, especially batting average-wise. Listener auction, picked up Christian Scott, dropped Jesse Schultens 87-71. Picked up JTR, dropped Logan Ohapi. That was a gift. I played all last week with Ohapi because there's no replacements, 24-9. Picked up Rico Garcia, dropped Rhett Lauder. God, that felt good. 14-11. Then I picked up the other kind of second base. I think he's going to get other positions soon. Picked up Vaughn Grissom, dropped the A's Max Muncy 6-2. Grissom was playing regularly until today. It's him and Apraza both got the day off today, which is just the Angels doing Angel things. But Grissom's swinging it well. I think he needs to get some full run to see what's capable there. So stashed at this point in time. And then the last one here, my OC. I picked up Jack Perkins, dropped Kumar Rocker. So I got Lats in 112, Perkins in the other 12, obviously. So no 15s there. Dropped Kumar Rocker 76-51. I like Rocker a lot still. It's been rocky for him. And in a 12, he's a streamer. In a 15, you can probably bench stream him. In a 12, he's a streamer. Added MJ Melendez, dropped Everson Pereira, who's hurt 8-0. Added Marcelo Meyer, dropped Max Muncy from the A's 6-0. And added Brian Rocchio, dropped Jose Fernandez of the D-backs 5-0. Just kind of like a line shift on the bench is what that came down to. Better matchups up ahead and kind of playing those games right now. And Casey Schmidt just went yard for the Giants in his first at-bat. So that answers that question.
It's a beast.
All righty. Love him. Glad they didn't bench him yet. All right. Let's do a couple Discord questions here before we wrap things up. Ben, there we go. Our buddy Corbin Young says, what's your weekly process for lineup setting? Great question, honestly, because we've joked about it a lot with some of these pitching matchups these days and other factors. It's a pain in the butt at times is the best way I'll put it. So what's your process, Ben?
Well, hitters a little more straightforward. I feel a lot more comfortable just kind of seeing who they're lined up against. I compare to RotoWire. I don't trust the NFBC's probables. They're not always wrong, but some are very frequently they're going to be off to like RotoWire has, or I'm sure Fangraphs has. So I kind of line up, So I go look at the platoons, pretty basic stuff. But then pitching is a little more of an in-depth thing that I do. So I was mentioning, I think for Pallante last 3 weeks stats, I pull in a custom report from Fangraphs into my one spreadsheet. And I just kind of compare who I have on the fringes for my lineups. And I look at their underlying stats, the guys who I'm unsure about. I'll kind of rank. So I, like, for example, my one main event, I had 5 guys written down today. I wrote down what their opponent's WRC plus is for the week. If there's a 2-star week, I average them together. I look at like some start sit articles on online different websites. Like I go to Pitcher List. I look at Roto Baller, look at their Sierras over the last 3 weeks or whatever time period I look at, and kind of rank all those together. And I get like an average rank. And then I kind of use that to go kind of maybe guide me with how many starters I need amongst those guys I'm looking at and comparing. So it takes a little bit of time to do that for my pitchers. I only go that in depth with my main events. Like for my DCs, I'll look up some of those things like the WRC plus of the opponents or how a pitcher's doing. but nothing too comparative like I just mentioned with the main events, but just really. And of course, I thought easier on Friday. You're not doing that with the pitchers. You're just doing the lineups again. So Friday is a lot quicker, thankfully. But yes, it's a lot of agonizing when it comes to some of these start sits for the pitchers, at least. Like, I was very relieved once I kind of finished doing my initial pass. And I kind of, it was nice. I kind of let it sit today. I was working out afterwards. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to think about fantasy for a while. I have to like break the anxiety that was boiling, figuring out these lineup decisions. So it's tougher with the pitcher. Try to get a little more granular, a little more data backed if I can, because it's so. But people like to have options on their benches, but I'm a big proponent of the more opportunities the more decisions you have to make, the greater the chance of a mistake you're going to make is, because it's almost better to have like injured guys on your bench. Cause you're like, okay, this is my lineup and that's it. There's no thinking about it. And you can't triple think decisions at least. So it may sound weird to you, but I sometimes think the options kind of can hurt you sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because that does happen so many times. And then you're sitting there by a Thursday going, yep, made the wrong choice here. That was great. And like, I like having the options, especially with as bad, like last week, I was joking that I sat some guys like I never thought I would sit for, you know, like Montero and Corbin, and it worked out great. Like, I jumped a lot of points in a few days, like, because it just, you played the matchups and it worked. But it doesn't always work that way in pitching. But pitching is the one that I focus on a ton more, based kind of on like, the opponents obviously are important, but how's this pitcher throwing? Multiple factors involved. There were hitters. It's just like, okay, what's the matchups? Like, I'm more often than not, my pitchers are pretty locked. My hitters are pretty locked in. These are the guys I'm rolling with unless something crazy is going on. Sorry. And that could be happening. But yeah, it's not a fun process. Thank God I'm so busy on Mondays that I can't sit around and agonize over it all day on the West Coast, where Ben has extra windows to focus on it. But yeah, it's kind of what takes place over here. Real quick in the chat here, Jason Wanick says, I can't wait for Ben's speech in Las Vegas this year. It'll be great, because he'll have to come to Vegas this year, which would be really, really cool. All right, some more listener questions here. Sean Charts, oh, sorry, he's just kudos to you on being the main event overall leader. Mailman Mike says, do you have different fab price points based on the type of free agent? For example, a streamer versus a player you think can help you for the rest of the year, or does it always come down to team needs and what a owner is willing to pay? You kind of hit on this last week with Timothy's question, but any thoughts of maybe re-answering that or elaborating on that?
Yeah, I think all that is true in some degree to me. So the thing I've been saying lately is, always pay or always bid what you're comfortable paying for that player. Ultimately, is what it comes down to. And then what you're comfortable playing is should be dependent upon how you think how sure you are of the player. You're never gonna be fully sure, of course. But the streamer versus a rest of season player, rest of season in quotes, because things can change all the time. But if you think someone's gonna be on your team for the long haul, you probably want to bid more if you think they have that upside to stick around. So it's very. Like I said last week, it's more of an art than anything. And it comes with reps. So like you're bidding like $6 on Vaughn Grissom, for example. Like it's a flyer bid on that. You're not going to bid $30 on him, because it's just, he doesn't have that value right now. And like the chances of him hitting that are very low, but there's playing time upside. He's kind of been in lineup every once in a while. So just being aware of those different price points, and like the SP streamers can be tricky. Like you really want to try to get someone, but it's easy to overpay if you do that. And like the Henderson and Scott bids are it's very easy to go like 200 plus on those guys because they're the big names, but you have to be comfortable not getting a guy potentially, because you can't get everybody. So it takes reps. Unfortunately, it's the only thing I can say. Like experience is really a big help in fab. You can't really like put a number on it. And then if you use like Vlad's resources, for example, like the FTN article that Vlad puts out every weekend. So many other people use that. So then do you adjust up, but everyone else is adjusting up too potentially. So it's just hard to, it's not easy. It's just what you're comfortable with. And then you have to be comfortable with letting the chips fall how they will.
Yeah. And that's one reason why I don't even have FTN anymore, sadly. But when I used to look at it, I always looked after FabRan to kind of see where my brain was at compared to everybody else. because I didn't want to be in that mess. I already do all my own fab work. I don't do pricing for it because to me it's such personal and team dependent on what you tell. Like pretty much everything you're saying there, like it's just I just kind of shrunk it up real quick. It's like literally it comes down to what you're willing to pay. Like you mentioned how in your main event you bid one thing and the listener you bid something else, and if you would have been your main event bid, you wouldn't have won it here, but you already knew like the process. Like that's just reps, as you said, but there's no exact science in the end. Like it's just kind of what do you feel the best thing you said both weeks, you said it both times, is what are you comfortable basically spending or losing, is the way I look at it. Like out of your budget, what are you comfortable with for this player? And that should be all that matters in the end. And that's one thing Guilds has preached forever, because he just goes flying. I want to get my guys, so I'm gonna spend my money. Now I don't go as crazy as Guilds does, obviously.
Nobody does.
Ben does. No one really does. He's on a head of a world of his own. It works. That's the thing. It works for him. So, like, to find what works for you. But yeah, for like Ben, you see how he spends things and how I spend things and so on and so forth. Is find what works for you and go from there. All right. Last question we have in the Discord is John Wilder says, "Good evening. When do you start looking at other teams' fab dollars and base your bids strategies off of that?" I am guilty of really never doing that, but I know a lot of smart players that do that. So Ben might is probably one of those smart players that does that. When do you start going about that?
I don't usually do that, but I think I may have started in like a team where I've been chasing the main event in the past, because I'll look like in September if you're competing with, because at that point you have like $20 maybe with 2 weeks left or something like that, and you're looking to see what other teams may have. But like right now, it's just there's a lot of money around still, so I'm not gonna look at other teams. I'm more worried about like how I value a player. But I think in September you could definitely do that, late September.
Yeah, like I usually am so wrapped up in just making my teams better, I don't really care. Maybe I should. Like I said, maybe there's an exact science to it, but. And there is actually an exact science to it. I've heard you guys talk about it, but.
Well, no, there's another good example. So say in August, Robbie Snelling finally gets called up by the Marlins and you have $500 left. Next highest guy is 300. Maybe you bid 301 just to call it safe if you really want Snelling. I think that's when it would matter too. One of those big prospects mid-year and at a time when there's not a lot of fab left like there is right now. So I think that's the other time I would do it. Still later in the year though, but not as late.
Yep. No, that's fair as well. Certain situations like that do actually make sense. All right. We'll wrap it up there. Week 7 fab is in the books. We're already on to week 8. There's interesting baseball all over the place. A lot of news came out on Monday that we will have to kind of wrap our heads around as the week goes along. A lot of players coming back from the IL, it looks like, this week though. So that could be a plus as well. So this is where you get to start looking at drops each week, folks. Start watching the drops, because if anything, it's kind of like the Christian Scott method is if a guy does bad or gets dropped because of playing time, but you still have hope there, you can get him for cheap and stash now if you have room for that. So little things like that could be taken care of. But any final thoughts, Ben?
No, not as crazy a week as fat and fab, which is kind of nice. I don't know. It can be stressful if every week's like how it was the previous 2 weeks. So it's good that it's kind of slowing down. He's got to wait. Like I said, Robbie Snelling, hopefully he gets called up soon, but he's going to be a high priced pitcher as well. So I don't know. I'll have to wait and see. And hopefully nobody else gets hurt like Scooble did. There's no more injuries. Let's turn off injuries.
Yeah, if we could go to that video game setting to turn off injuries and get maybe into easy mode for the power department, that'd be cool. But, yeah, it's rough out there. Fab slowing down is nice. Like, weekly I've been stressing out over the AC stuff, but this week, like, was the most relaxed Fab week for me because it's just, like, where my team sits for once, it wasn't, like, murdered out there. And I'm like, okay, I can just kind of fill small holes, if that makes sense, and see where it goes. Like, that won't be that way every week. I'm aware of that. But for a few weeks like that, it doesn't stink to have to happen. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure y'all follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDNTrick. We'll be back with you guys next week to recap the week 8 fab and much, much more. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 851, your week 7 fab recap. Catch y'all next time.